Hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday here in the city. Nice day out there. It was started out a little cool this morning, but it's going to be like 61 degrees by later this afternoon. Nice day as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. As always, interesting things to tell you about. Always a lot of arts events going on in the city, be it theater, be it opera, be it ballet, lots of things going on. And things get more into it all the time as spring unfolds itself for us. We're going to talk with our friends from the Kansas City Lyric Opera today. We're going to talk about the very interesting opera they have. You've probably heard of the movie, or seen the movie, or heard of the incident that happened back in the 80s. The story is called Dead Man Walking. The lady, a nun, is a pen pal to a convicted murderer on death row. With us to tell us all about it, two of the performers in the show, Daniel Belcher. He's a local man. He's with us.
Yes.
Hails, I guess, from Liberty now.
Liberty, but from St. Joe originally, yeah.
He plays the role of Owen Hart. He is a baritone. He has performed all over the world, really. I have credits listed for him in Paris, London, New York, San Francisco, Berlin, Stuttgart, Amsterdam, Geneva, Toronto, Tokyo, Seoul, Houston, a repertoire of over 70 roles now.
Yes, it makes me sound bad.
How come you haven't been on my show before?
I don't know how we've never lined that up, but yeah, this is my ninth role with the Lyric Opera, and I first performed when I was a student of William Jewell with the Lyric in the chorus in 1992, and it's always nice to come home to my home company.
Were you ever part of the Harriman Jewell series?
Yes, I did a recital there a couple years ago, but on campus. We did it in Gano Chapel, where the series actually originally started.
Yeah, where the fate was at Pavarotti.
Pavarotti sang that, yes.
Was the first performer.
His recital debut was actually in the chapel of William Jewell, so it's quite amazing.
It really is. Well, thanks for being
of
here.
Of course.
Talk more about your life later. Maria Zivchek is with us as well. She plays Mrs. Patrick
DeRoche.
This looks like Rebecca Roche on our radio station. Mm-hmm. She is a mezzo soprano, and she has had many. She's performed with many theaters as well. I guess she lives in New York City, so I would say the Metropolitan Opera, you would probably consider your top credit there in New York.
Right.
The Central City Opera in Colorado, the Opera Theater of St. Louis, the Arizona Opera, Dallas Opera, Cincinnati Opera, Opera Atlanta, and many others probably as well.
Yep.
The name of the course, of course, of the show is Dead Man Walking. You remember, as I said earlier, the movie featuring Susan Sarandon of a number of years ago. But based on, what did you tell me earlier, Maria? You said a composite of two different prisoners.
Right, it's based on the book called Dead Man Walking.
Exactly.
By Helen Prejean. She counsels convicts, and these particular guys were on death row, and so she counsels them either just so that they have a feeling that someone does care, and if they have the chance to get right in their souls with, you know, whether they want to confess or not, or they just have some kind of counseling through her.
Yeah. But the lady then, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, is a nun.
Yes.
And that probably feeds into the story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, tell me, Maria, about your role in the show, Mrs. Patrick DeRoche.
Right. I am actually the convict's mother, and I go to the pardon board and ask, because we know that he was convicted and we know that he is set for death row, and I go to the pardon board and beg for them to please, you know, to spare his life.
Yeah.
And then there's a scene in the second act where we actually have to say goodbye.
Sure.
And there's what happens when these families meet the convicts before they are to die is very realistic. They take photographs. you know, the final family photograph, and it's just very, it's very touching. It's a very, it's a very tough subject matter, and it's very real. Every minute of it is very real, and so it's a little. I don't know. It's a little glimmer. It's just the wrong word, it's a little glimmer into that whole life, and how one crime, even though it's awful crime, it affects so many more people than just the victims that it happens to.
And those are the ones that have to carry it, carry the burden on forever, essentially.
Right. Right.
Now, Daniel plays the role of Owen Hart.
Yes.
How does Owen fit into the story?
Owen is the father of the girl that is raped and murdered.
I see.
By Desrochers. And it's, this piece has always been on the radar for me, and particularly since I'm kind of getting on of age. The role of Owen Hart had such an appeal to me. He and his wife they have one child. And so when she is taken from them, they're truly alone. And so my wife and I, we have one daughter. She's 12 years old. So there's a lot of personal relevancy, shall I say. And it's made grappling with the role actually quite challenging, how to juggle it emotionally. But he is a man who is consumed completely with anger. By the time the parole board meeting comes around 8 years have passed, and this man has been consumed with rage.
For the entire time.
Mm-hmm. And so for my character, it's not that he really truly finds peace, but by the time the second act rolls around, he has a conversation with Sister Helen, and this anger has eaten him alive. Like Maria was saying, all of the characters, the consequences of the tentacles kind of reach out far beyond just the actual
far beyond. I mean, it was crime. The community was affected by it. Everybody was
exactly
just affected by this crime. And in the beginning, Owen Hart he wants him dead. Absolutely. You'd think that the story is about whether you're for or against the death penalty, but it really isn't. And because it explains everybody's perspective, every single person's. And Owen Hart is there when Mrs. Desrochers pleads for her son's life.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, haven't we all suffered? I mean, everybody has suffered in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't commit the crime, but she is suffering. She is, the community is against her. Her other sons are suffering. Mm-hmm. Owen Hart, when he hears that, he, of course, is like, my daughter's dead, you know. I don't want to hear about any of that, but there are so many different sides to it. And in the second act, Owen says to the Helen Prejean, he says to her, you know, he has said some things in absolute hatred, but he's everybody's sad. Everybody is sorry, and everybody is sad. And there's like no one wins. Absolutely
exactly.
No matter the amount of hate,
his impending death, nothing will bring back my child. Nothing.
No.
And so that is the burden that will eternally weigh on his soul. And so it's actually quite touching, because at the end he tells the sister who he's had such animosity towards, he's like, please come visit. And visit me soon.
Counsel me too.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
And that's something that Sister Helenus apparently said, that over time she didn't realize the impact it had on the families, and so she's made it a point to reach out to the families of these victims.
And this book
equally
of this book that she wrote of this experience was one of her was her first experience with counseling a convict. So she learned everything as she was going too. She was completely new to all of this. And, you know, even just the shock of going to the jail and going and seeing him in shackles and, you know, everything from the beginning was absolutely foreign to her. You know, and then she learned, and then when she meets the parents, she's like, oh, you know, everybody is affected by this. They should be counseled too. They shouldn't be forgotten either.
Exactly.
And the family of the convict shouldn't be forgotten either. We, you know, they didn't do anything, but they have to live with this too.
Mm-hmm. Does your character feel guilt? I mean, mothers have
absolutely.
Not all the time, but a certain influence.
Absolutely.
Does she feel badly about that?
Absolutely.
I guess she would.
Yep. I think, you know, it's the usual, you're a product of your environment, you're a product of how much, you know, in the community, how much money you make, whether you're poor, whether you're rich, whether you're, you know, and this family, they're poor, and they struggled every day to stay, you know, just to be alive, and they're a product of their community, they live in Louisiana, hot. I mean, everything is a struggle.
Completely.
Every single thing is a struggle.
Sure.
You know, and the boys, who knows? They, you know, they get bored. You get into trouble. I mean, you know, who
exactly.
knows? Who knows what happens? But, of course, she feels terrible, absolutely terrible. And part of her, part of this character is she's kind of in denial about it, too. I remember the sweet little son that I had. When he was younger, he was so sweet. And then as they grow up, you know, she had more kids. So she was, you know, raising those kids from a different father. And so who knows if they, you know what I mean, her parenting went to the wayside a little bit once, the older sons grew up and mm-hmm. went kind of on their own. And, you know, so she failed them. She feels that she failed them miserably, and she failed everybody because
exactly.
of what he did.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we never know what's going to happen in life that will
right.
change things.
Right.
Things can change
in the blink of an eye.
In one day.
Yeah,
yes.
exactly.
Right. And the hard part for me is I'm not a mother in my actual life. So it's hard for me to fathom that you, no matter what they do, you still love them. You don't judge them for what you do because they are your flesh and blood. They are your son, which mm-hmm. I can't put my finger on that. You know, it's you know, if it was my brother.
Well, you have an incredible maternal instinct because it reads so true and it's so honest. What you're able to find, her, it's mm-hmm. really it's really extraordinary.
Thanks.
Sure, we're speaking with
Maria. Go ahead.
No, I don't need to review
the
yet.
The interesting thing is, like I said, it's really tough subject matter. But the interesting
yeah.
thing is, it's not about whether you agree or disagree with the death penalty. It really isn't. This show does not tell you what to think. It does not steer you in one direction. It kind of just says, look, this is how these people are feeling. This is how Helen Prejean is feeling. This is how the convict is feeling. He's going to lose his life. And, he, you know, and it kind of just leaves you, it doesn't even lead you into a certain way of thinking about it. As soon as it gets to a climactic point, it moves on.
But yet it may encourage you to ask questions.
Right, exactly.
As the
that's
listener
all it does.
And
because,
as the
right.
artist. The
there are no results.
Right.
Like I said, no one wins.
Yeah.
It's just...
The very first scene of the opera is the crime, is the rape and double murder.
Right.
And so it does not try to candy coat it. It does not hide it. It is what it is. And the consequences that will now spill out over the next 2.5 hours of the piece of theater are a reflection of that. But it in no way tries to hide the fact that something terrible
happened.
Horrific happened.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. We're speaking with Maria Zifchek, who plays the role of the mother of the accused, and Daniel Belcher, who plays the role of the father of the victim
yeah.
in the Lyric Opera production of Dead Man Walking. It opens this Saturday, March the 4th at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue on Wednesday the 8th of March at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 10th of March at 7:30 p.m., and a matinee on Sunday the 12th of March at 2:00 p.m. Performances of the Lyric Opera, of course, are at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Performing Arts just south of downtown Kansas City. The number to call for more information, if you have questions, 816-471-7344, or you can go online and learn a lot more at kcopera.org. We've heard the performers talk about how personal this can get for them as performers, but you have the increased burden of singing the show rather than someone in a play would do or a movie where they just act the role. Maria, how is that different? Of course, if you've done lots of opera, I guess you're used to doing that, but is it difficult to interpret how she's feeling through song?
Very, very hard. And in this particular piece, I mean, it's just so tough. And that's what the rehearsal process is for, because sometimes, you know, in these scenes, we cry through mm-hmm. the entire thing. So, and you know, when you cry, you can't sing. You know, mm-hmm. it makes
sometimes you can barely speak. So.
Right. So, I mean, even the control that you need to not cry and to actually sing is just horrible. It's very, very hard. You know, and luckily, Mrs. Desrochers can cry. You know what I mean? But there's a balance. It really, you have to work through what you can get through. And still, every single time I do it, there are different things that make me start to cry.
Don't you find, like,
different parts?
Different words sometimes will trigger a new response.
Right.
And it's quite remarkable, because my philosophy is that, you know, my job is the storyteller. Mm-hmm. So it's my job to make the audience feel this. And so if it's a completely cathartic sometimes experience for me, it's tough, because you live in these words and you have to sing this spectacular score. And there's one line I have to sing, "Nothing's going to bring back my little girl." And I'm sorry, I always go mm-hmm. to my own child. And it's a very hard line for me to make it through. And I'm like, Danny, this is about the journey I have to take the audience on. I have to communicate in my way, but I have to deliver this to the audience so that they feel it. So it's always kind of finding that perfect balance.
Well, that's what's so unique too about this piece, is that every time we perform it, it's a journey for us too.
Yeah.
You know, so it really tugs at the heartstrings. It really does. The entire show doesn't let up, and it's very cathartic for everybody, you know, to experience. So
that's made a pretty extraordinary ensemble. It's my first time doing the piece. Maria's done the opera before, and the closeness of the cast. I mean, I think we all see each other in rather vulnerable moments, as we explore these characters.
It is. It's very risky.
It's a very risky
piece. It
really is. Yeah, you kind of live at the extreme. And it makes us question ourselves. And how would we react as these
right?
people?
I still don't know.
Yeah.
I still don't know. Like, for instance, like the Boston bombers. Helen Prejean went to court about Joe Carr Sarnaev.
Right. Oh, really?
And fought for his life. And he did. He ended up getting the death penalty, didn't he? But she went and fought for him. And so all of the people that were related to those that died or that got blown up, how can you even imagine that someone would fight for his life? You know what I mean? When it's so there's like so many sides of it. You can see it pertains to right now. It pertains to 1980. It's still very relevant. This piece is very, very relevant, and will stay that way.
Yeah, there was a discussion in Alabama, I believe, recently, where they were still discussing, you know, the drugs utilized, and there's a whole issue mm-hmm. now with the drugs. The EU will not sell them, and it's something we live with, and the discussion needs to continue. And if this piece can help further conversations about things that are real in our country, then it's
right.
So
it is important to remember, though, that it is not about the death penalty. It is about every single thing else.
Yeah,
which you don't even think about.
And all these people,
the people involved, in each one of their feelings.
During that pardon board scene, she is pleading for her son's life, and then Owen Hart barges in and goes, "Hey, He killed my daughter. He stabbed her. He raped her. Like, what are you even doing here? Like she's trying to for them to see that he's a good person, that he's an actual human being, a good person. But Owen Hart is saying, hey, he killed my daughter.
Yeah, to me that man means one thing.
A killer. That's it.
A man that stabbed my daughter 37 times.
Yeah.
That's all he means.
I guess it's hard to deal with the process. There is a process to deal with these. There's a parole board. There are various appeals process.
Exactly.
And we just have to let those play out much as we might disagree with all that. We have to let that happen. That would be the only advice I really could give. It would be hard for me to identify, as you said, with some of the positions
as well. I would think until you stand in those people's shoes. Even as myself as a parent trying to relate, I have my daughter.
Of course.
Yeah. I can't imagine the pain all these people, and equally the family of the murderer.
You
can't believe that would be your child that would have done this.
Uh-huh.
It's just not possible. So,
of course you blame yourself, too. Of course. The parent would blame themselves.
And you have to think, out of all the possible victims he could have chosen, why did he choose my daughter?
Of course.
You have to think that as well.
Oh. Right. And, of course, it was totally a random thing.
They stumbled onto these kids.
Yeah.
And in this particular opera, it doesn't go with the story, but in this opera, there were two killers, and both of them were her sons.
Really?
It was the kill. This Joe Desrochers and her and his brother. So, but he's not really mentioned. The other one is he's seen in the beginning, but he's not really mentioned throughout the rest of the opera. Except that he doesn't lose his life. He goes to jail forever, but he does not.
He gets a life sentence.
Right, he gets a life sentence.
People don't often understand why that would happen with one and not the other.
Right.
And, of course, there's technicalities and all of that.
Exactly. But that's all involved, too, that you don't even think about.
And, of course, it's impossible to understand all that unless you're intimately involved in that process. It really is. This might be a good time to interject that Sister Prejean will be in Kansas City on March the 3rd, so that will be Friday, at 6:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for a discussion and book signing. So those of you who would like to meet her, possibly answer a question or ask a question that she might want to answer for you, that might be a good opportunity for you to do that. So I throw that out there for your consideration on March 3rd, 6:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center, a discussion and book signing. I'm sure she'll have a lot of interesting things to say. To find out about that, you can call, of course, the opera's line. The same line would make arrangements or inquiries about possible tickets. It would be 816-471-7344 or on their website. Always lots of information on websites. This was, as I noted earlier, there was a lot of activities about this show that are available for the public to see, and you can learn about that also by going online to kcopera.org. We're speaking with two of the performers. Obviously, this has been a grueling process for both of you. When you did this, you've done this several times now, right?
This is my second production of it, but the last time I did it was in Central City a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't get any easier.
Nope, and, the cast was all different, and that's always very interesting to see how your rapport will be with, I had never met my son before, the person who plays my son. And this time, this time I had worked with him. The last time we worked together was in 2006, and it was in Cozy, and he was my boyfriend.
Oh.
So it was a completely different thing.
Well, that happens in the art.
Roles
are often switched around.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in the last time Maria and I worked together, we were doing the Magic Flute in Houston in 2004. And
right.
I was the comedian, and
long time
we both were, and so it's one of the beauties of our art form that we people come in and out of our lives, and you get to reconnect and.
Right.
An extraordinary thing. Yeah, very lucky.
You have extended family, should I say, all over the world.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that must be an interesting life. A lot of traveling. How many
nomadic.
Miles? How many miles? Just estimate. Will you travel this year? For
God, I don't even know.
Just what about
usually
Maria?
A good 100,000? Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
What about Maria?
I'm a little more United States based. but I'd rarely travel internationally, but because I have ties at home. I'm a landlord, and I have dogs, and so I try to travel with them, you know.
Yeah.
But, I have no idea.
From the Bronx. So you're a landlord in the Bronx?
I am a landlord in the Bronx, yes.
An opera singer, landlord in the Bronx. There's a sitcom there.
Right, something.
And you have opera singers.
I used to.
Okay.
Yeah, I have new tenants now.
Okay.
He's a singer, too. He's a cantor at a church.
There you go.
Yep. So he's very busy.
Like I said, there's a traditional life, right?
Yeah.
Kind of an extended version of Rant.
Our life for liberty seems quite boring compared to... Miss Maria has.
The show, of course, is Dead Man Walking, based on a story, based on two incidences in the life of Sister Prejean. She was a pen pal to a convicted murderer on death row. The show opens this Saturday, the 4th at 7:30. Performances continue on Wednesday, the 8th of March at 7:30. Another performance on Friday, the 10th at 7:30. Wrapping things up on Sunday, the 12th, with a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m., a production of the Lyric Opera at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts, just south of downtown. Very convenient location. The number to call for more information is 816-471-7344 or online at kcopera.org. And don't forget, if this interests you, the reality of it, actually, incidences of that actually happened in real life. Sister Prejean will be in Kansas City on March the 3rd at 6:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for a discussion and book signing. And that does sound most interesting, if that's something that any of you would be interested in out there. Well, I want to thank you both for coming on the show
and
telling me about it. It was a really good discussion. When you consider some of the motivation behind your characters, that was just as interesting as all the other information was. I thank you both for sharing that. Couldn't always be easy to do that.
No,
it's not. Highly personal.
Right.
And if you can personalize it, that makes it all the better. Some people can't personalize it, but that's you're
the job of the artist.
That's why you're a professional.
But with this particular piece, you really can't help it. Sure. You really can't.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Show opens this Saturday, March the 4th. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, we're going to lighten things up. A musical from the Barn Players. We're going to talk about that next when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. Well, welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. After a half hour like that, we need to lighten things up a little. So I'm hoping that High Fidelity, being presented by the Barn Players, is a light, fun, musical excursion into happiness.
Yeah, I'd say it will.
Okay. For the most part.
I don't know if I'm happy.
And I have, of course, two guests from the Barn Players production of High Fidelity. It is a musical. Mm-hmm. Delano Mendoza is here. He is the music director for High Fidelity. Don't have much of a bio on you. What can you tell the audience about yourself?
Well, this is actually the first show that I'm going to be music directing, so it's kind of a fun venture, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity. I moved up to Kansas City from Emporia a couple of years ago and for theater and music purposes, and so after studying music education at Emporia State, I moved up and have had several roles in different community theater shows, and so I'm excited to venture out into the music directing gig now.
Would you would prefer that to being a performer?
I love both a lot. Yeah, sure. They're both equally fun and exciting for me, and so I enjoy aspects of both.
Thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
We'll talk to you about your duties. Corey Weber is here as well. She plays the role of Liz. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I also went to Emporia State University.
Ah, it's an Emporia State cast.
Actually, a large number of us went to Emporia State, so we have kind of a good collection of alums in this show.
I guess the key is, did the director go to Emporia
State? She did.
There you
go. And our
a lot of the crew,
and our assistant stage manager and our costume designer, and a lot of us did.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Liz. How does Liz fit into this show?
Well, the main character of the show, his name is Rob, and everyone kind of exists in relationship to him. It's him talking about all of his failed relationships, his top five worst breakups, are a big theme of this show. He's going through a breakup during the show. Liz is his, probably one of his best friends. They've known each other forever, and she's basically just there to give him a hard time and remind him of why he keeps failing, and but, you know, to be a friend and bring him Danish and cheer him up.
Sure.
But she spends a lot of time nagging him and, you know.
Well, everyone, of course, loves to be reminded of why they keep failing.
Right. And it's kind of fun to be the reminder. Sometimes.
Yeah, well, where does the musical aspect of it come into it? Like, maybe you should answer.
Sure. Well, the really cool thing about High Fidelity is that it's set in the 90s, and it's in a record store in the 90s, and so a lot of the music is influenced by artists that you would have seen in a record store in the 90s. So there's influences from Aretha Franklin, Billy Joel, the Beastie Boys. There's just so many different artists that play into this show. Mm-hmm. And you don't ever actually hear any of their music, but you can tell that it's influenced from their music. And so it's really neat to have so many different varieties in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really nice and a really cool aspect of the show. It's not something you see in a bunch of shows.
Okay, so it's none of their music specifically, but it's music that is patterned on the style. Perhaps.
Correct. You can, and you will definitely, if you know any of that music, yeah, you will definitely pick up on it as you listen to the music from the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Corey, tell us about some of the songs that you sing.
Well, my character has one major song, and it's pretty much a direct allusion to, if you're familiar with the Blues Brothers.
Oh, yes.
The scene with Aretha Franklin.
Anyone my age would be, yes.
Well, there's a big scene with Aretha Franklin where she sings "You Better Think," and everyone in the diner kind of starts singing along, and then it all goes right back to normal. And that's exactly what the scene is. The song is called "She Goes," and she's basically saying, every time you meet a girl, you move in together, and there she goes. So it's kind of a "You Better Think" moment.
Sure.
But it's the same style as that song is. So it's kind of cool. It's a pretty powerful section, very, like, calling upon Aretha to give you strength in the moment.
So it's how the music influences the characters within the context of the story.
Yeah. The scriptwriters really did a great job, I think, of calling on these references from the 90s and putting them into these scenes. You can tell exactly what they are. They fit perfectly. They give context to the scene as well. Mm-hmm. And like he was saying, it's not exactly any of the same music, but except there is that one moment where the Nirvana riff from Smells Like Teen Spirit plays at the end of... she sings a song about Kurt Cobain.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think it all fits in really well.
Yeah. Well, what's your philosophy on this? You're the musical director.
Yeah. It definitely took me, you know, I was born in early 90s, and so it took me a lot of researching and listening to make sure that I was familiar with all of the different styles of music and making sure that I can convey that to the cast as well. To make sure just that it does come across that way and that the audience can kind of feel all those cool vibes from the 90s and see it and feel it and just kind of almost be back there, you know, if they were there and experienced the 90s. So it's been a really fun journey, and I think the cast has done a great job of portraying all that too, and kind of it's neat because there's so many different little things that people said in the 90s that you'll hear throughout the show, and just the whole feel of it and the look of it is really neat. And so... The music isn't necessarily, it's just so diverse that it doesn't follow a certain pattern or anything. There's little things that'll pop back up here and there throughout different parts, but it does just kind of give you an array of things, and it's really nice.
Yeah, I have to ask about the music. People often want to know, do you have live musicians? Or these?
Yeah, we do. We have a pit of 10 people. It's awesome. They're very talented. The cast is so talented. They are all excellent singers and actors and dancers.
Me so much.
Some are fantastic. Oh, they're all can move really well. Mm-hmm. It is a pleasure to work with such a talented group of musicians, both in the cast and in the orchestra.
Oh, sure. Now, are the musicians of the right age group that they would understand and be able to play the music of the 90s? That it would be difficult, I think, than it would be other decades.
Sure. Actually, 9 out of 10 are.
There's
one of them that's a very young one. He's in high school. Uh-huh. He's great, though. He's great, and he's. I'm happy to have him there as well. So most of them kind of do know and have caught on real quick to that. So in rehearsals, it was real easy because they knew, you know, they kind of knew the feel of the songs. It didn't take much from me. It made my job a lot easier than it could have been. So I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. So you pick the musicians, you and the director of the show, pick the musicians together and decide what you want. I guess there's different philosophies on how you want these numbers done.
Sure. She, to be honest with you, Tiffany kind of let me take the reins a little bit when it came to the music and let me go with it. She's listened to it, and I think everybody's happy with it. They sound incredible, and they look incredible, and so it's just a really great thing. And I'm very thankful for the whole thing. It's just been a really good time, and I'm excited for other people to get to see it now and see what we've been working on for the past 5 weeks.
The show opens this Friday, the 3rd of March at 7:30 p.m. at the Barn. It's three consecutive weekends usually. So it's the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th this weekend, Friday evening, 7:30. Saturday evening, also 7:30. A matinee on Sunday, 2:00 p.m. The second weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, same basic schedule, evenings on the 10th and the 11th, a matinee on the 12th, a special Monday night performance on Monday the 13th. Fortunately, the 13th is not unlucky on Monday. So you get to do a special. Usually they call that an industry night performance.
Right.
That's what this is as well. So an extra added performance on Monday the 13th. Then the third weekend of performances, the 17th, 18th, and a matinee then on the 19th. All at the Barn Players of Mission, Kansas. They are located at 6219 Martway in Mission, just across the street from that big community center. What is the name of that community center? It's escaping me right now. But it's right across the street. Essentially, 62nd and Martway in Mission, Kansas. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code to do that. Effectively, 66202. And there is a phone number to call. As they always point out to me, no one is there all the time to answer your calls. So if you have a question, especially if there's a disability issue with someone in your party, you probably should call and leave your question. But that number is 913-432-9100. The Barn Players of Mission, Kansas. We're speaking with with one of the performers, Corey Weber, who plays the role of Liz, and Delano Mendoza, who is the musical director of the show. What about some of the other characters in the show? How they fit in?
Well, it was a movie first, and it kind of follows the movie. If you're familiar with the movie, it's starring John Cusack and Jack Black, and it centers around Rob and his employees at the record store. It's kind of home base for the show. And so there's Barry, who's kind of a clown. He was the Jack Black character in the film. He's always joking, very, you know, powerful guy. And then there's Dick, who is very dry, like one-note, straight-faced, but also funny in that way. Mm-hmm. And then Laura is Rob's girlfriend, who he is going through the process of breaking up with during, like, at the point where we find him when the show starts. And then there's Ian, who is the new fellow she's seeing, and he's a very Zen patchouli, pita pamphlet pushing kind of guy who handled Kurt Cobain's intervention and failed, obviously, but he's very funny as well. So they all kind of, Rob calls them all to mind, and he directly addresses the audience throughout the show. He's telling them his experience. He talks about his top five breakups. So there are his past five girlfriends that are also characters that come back to haunt him multiple times. So it's very fun. It's funny. It's a really funny show.
You know, and it's really neat because the characters in the show are so eccentric and diverse. Mm-hmm. They are all so different in their own way.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, the times that I've been able to watch it before I had to be back in the pit and directing or conducting, you kind of fall in love with different ones when you watch it.
Yeah.
There's not just one character that's like that's my favorite character. You know, there's so many neat and diverse things that happen with each of their characters that you're like, oh, well, that was funny. I really love him. And then something else happens with somebody else, and you're like, well, she was awesome. I really fall in love with her now.
Yeah.
And so it kind of changes around for me, at least, because they are so different and yet not – you don't hate anybody, really. You know, they just have their own their own thing going on. It's cool.
I kind of wish I could watch it because it seems like it would be such a good time. I think to see it, you know, for the first time.
But it sure is funny.
I think it would be a good show for someone that's not really that into musicals because the music is so rock and roll and the harmonies are awesome, and it's a good time.
Yeah.
Not for kids.
That's very true.
Not for kids, you say?
Yeah, not for kids.
No. Just to let the parents know, in what respect, or do you mean not?
There's language. There's some situations that are more adult related, but for the grown-up, I think it'd be a great time.
Yes, analyzing one's failures, especially your girlfriend, would be a difficult experience. Do you tend to learn what the similarities are? Or are there similarities?
In his failures?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, he keeps repeating the same mistake.
Oh,
and that's kind of where Liz comes in. And she's like, listen, dude, you do this every time.
Same thing. Different day.
And he's coming to terms with that. And he's trying to overcome that. And the other characters have moments of that, too. Like Barry.
Yeah, they do.
Kind of coming into his shell. He wants to start a band. And then Dick meets a girl. And he doesn't know how to approach her. He's not schooled in the way of relationships. So everyone's kind of has their learning moment in this show. And even, you know, some of the smaller characters go on their journey, too. So,
I'm just going to throw out there, you probably don't know the answer. I know I certainly don't, but did the author base this on anything personal? Makes you wonder.
Well, it started as a book. And I don't know if he based it on anything personal. I would think so.
Makes for good comic fodder. About that.
Yeah. And it's good enough material that it went from book to movie to stage. So
you have the you act in this. You sing. Do you dance as well?
Not really.
Not really?
I do a few, movements. I can't really call it dancing. But there are girls that are working it up there, and I'm not one of them. But they are, they're killing
it. They've worked so hard.
They have, yeah.
Does the dancing fall under the jurisdiction, shall we say, of the music director?
It does not, no. Sometimes when you add dancing into the show after the music director is done with their part, it's a little frustrating for a second. It's like, those harmonies aren't there anymore. But it's just kind of a learning curve. You know, once you learn all the music, then you have to kind of add in the choreography. So the music does go to the side for a little bit, and then it comes together all at once. So it's cool to see that process happen. It's a little scary for a second, and then it comes together, and they've all worked so hard, though. It's incredible, really.
You've used the word harmony several times now, so I have to ask, is that one of the important things for you?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think people a lot of times realize how much harmony is in music, especially musical theater songs. The underlying oohs or ahs or things that are there that make the song big and bold without noticing, you know? Yeah. Same with the instruments, though. It all plays together.
Sure. Speaking with the music director and one of the performers in the Barn Players production of High Fidelity, opens this Friday, the 3rd, at the Barn Players out in Mission, Kansas. They're located, of course, as I said earlier, 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. I guess a big ensemble cast. I guess, do you feel like you're wrangling cattle sometimes?
No.
I don't have to ask.
No, they're great.
They're great.
Yeah, they really are.
Really, honestly, I'm not just bragging because we're on a radio show. It's a great ensemble. It really is a very talented group of people, and everyone's having a good time, and everyone's helping each other out. And it's been
very
really
nice
fun
to see.
Well, it's good when people work well together. That's the most important thing.
That doesn't always happen.
No, it doesn't.
This cast hung out a month before we started rehearsals.
Yeah.
They were so excited.
Yeah.
And everybody gets along. There's no egos in the room. It's just a very communicative cast who wants to work together to make the best product they can.
You're a very lucky man.
I am. I say it every day. I really am.
I hear stories. We can't always talk about it on the air. I hear stories of things going on behind the scenes, and I just have to chuckle sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Have you done? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's been interesting because most of the cast is younger than me by probably about 10 years.
Oh.
And they don't remember the 90s very well. So they will come up and say, does this outfit look 90s to you? Or can you tell me a 90s dance move?
I'm like, no. My memories of the 90s are it was pretty wide open. I don't know if there would be a specific move geared towards the
90s. Well, we talked about the Cabbage Patch and the Roger Rabbit the MC Hammer and, you know, there's a lot that I remember and they don't, but that's okay. Everyone was born at different times.
That's right. Well, you look like you fit in.
Thank you.
So right in there. Now, have you mostly done musicals in your career?
Mostly, yeah, mostly. I enjoy doing straight plays as well because I'm just as fond of acting as I am of singing, but yeah, I would say.
Where have the people perhaps seen you before?
This December, I was in It's a Wonderful Life, the live radio play at Metropolitan Ensemble Theater. Before that, in Leawood, I was Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd at the Leawood Stage Company. I did Into the Woods last March at the Just Off Broadway Theater. So I've been around a little bit.
So you've worked at the Met. So how is Karen Paisley different from Tiffany as far as directing is concerned?
Karen, I love Karen. Karen kind of has an organic approach where she follows her ideas and she kind of likes to see what people do naturally and then build that into, just build it up more and more. Mm-hmm. And then Tiffany has... she seems to have the approach of she knows exactly how she wants to put her cast together, and she kind of lets you go and do your thing. And she's not going to say anything unless it's not working because she wants you to just bring your own approach to it as well. And then so they definitely have really different styles, but they both of them always end up with awesome shows. Mm-hmm. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like working with both of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Singing and a little bit of moving, as you said, rather than dancing. Have you sung much before? I guess mm-hmm. in Sweeney Todd you probably did.
I sang a lot in Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
Yes. I've been singing since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I majored in theater and...
At Emporia State?
At Emporia State.
I find this interesting, the dichotomy there between Emporia State.
We're not there at the same time, but
that's right.
The director and I, Tiffany and I, were there at the same time. Many of the other people involved in this production, we all kind of went there. Our props, that's who I was forgetting, Melissa Loper, our props lady, was also there with us at the same time in Emporia. So we have
We've also got a big member that came from
that's right.
Emporia
and
State.
He was there when I was there because he played
and
for
he was
Cabaret
there when
I did
there too.
Yeah. Oh, he was?
Yeah.
So he bridged the gap.
Yep.
Are they going to have an Emporia State night at the barn?
I keep saying we need to take a picture and we never do it. But
we'll get it done.
We should.
Must do it. Michael insisted that you do it.
And
that's what Facebook is for.
That's right.
Make everyone at Emporia State aware. This is an alum event.
This is the power of Emporia State.
Why did you both attend Emporia State? Was it because of their theater program?
I was actually from Emporia, and so it was easy for me to go there and live at home, save some money. And it also had a really good music education program there as well, so I was fortunate to go there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was this a particular... professor that you were
when I started there from? Well, yeah, when I started there it was Dr. Terry Barham was there, who was the choral professor at the time. Unfortunately he retired just after the first year of being there, so after that I had Dr. Carol Krieger, who was also fantastic. I learned so much from her as well, so it was a good transition. It was a good thing that I was able to kind of learn from two different people and two different approaches.
She probably knows several of the cast then, I would think, so someone should invite her to the show.
They should.
Yes.
You should. We'll reach out to her.
You really should. What about you?
I did go for the theater program. Uh-huh. It wasn't too far from home, but far enough, you know. But also, the program had a great reputation. And Jim Ryan, if anybody knows him, he's retired now. But he was an excellent recruiter. He made you want to go. He made you want to be there and learn from him. And Dr. Harry Parker as well, who has moved on to Texas Christian University. But he was there most of the time that I was there, and they just did a great job of Well, one of the things that really drew me to that program is that it was generalized. You couldn't just walk in there and say, I'm an actor.
Oh.
Or I'm just a stage manager. You had to do everything. Sure. Everybody had to do everything. And that's one of the reasons I think that Emporia alums find each other in the theater, because we know that we all know how to do multiple things and that we'll all jump in. No one's going to stand there and say, that's not my job. So, yeah, so that's been great with this show, as we have so many of us. And,
oh, sure. Well, it sounds like the Emporia State people are going to take over the local theater thing.
The world, really.
much like the Stevens College program took over about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So many of them are in town now and have come and left in some cases.
You're saying it's a new era, that it's Emporia's time?
It's the Emporia time.
It's happening.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yeah, so they should have Emporia night at the Barn Players, mm-hmm. talking with people from the Barn Players, talking about their show, High Fidelity. Boy, that infers a big sound, a quadrasonic sound.
It is. It's fun. They're loud. The band is loud. It's like there's a lot of rock, pop rock from the 90s influences, and so it's fun. The guitarists are loving it. They're eating it up.
And they're awesome. And we call them the band. You know, usually you refer to them as the orchestra. But they're like a band because it's all...
Well, you consider the numbers, I would think the band would be more apropos. You mentioned Cobain several times. Is there an influence of his music in the show?
Yes. Well, there's... since... Laura, the love interest, the lead love interest, is dating this other guy who was the interventionist for Kurt Cobain. She sings a song about how she slept with someone who handled Kurt Cobain's intervention. And at the end of that song, there's you can hear a little bit of the melody from a famous Nirvana song, Smells Like Teen Spirit. So he kind of... he's kind of an influence in that number. I don't necessarily know throughout the rest of the show, but there's The Who. You can hear Led Zeppelin. You can hear Beastie Boys. There's just so many.
There are so many.
Yeah, there are so many.
Do they get into the boy groups, Backstreet Boys? And
really? No.
Some of the
No. It's a little bit more... of the earlier 90s that it references.
And even before the 90s.
It's 90s just, and back.
It's really what, again, what you would see in a record store. You know, like what in the 90s, what records you would see on a wall in the record store as opposed to just being 90s music.
Now, I will say John Tesh influences quite a bit.
Really?
Because the character Dick, who's a little more on the dry side and not so good at relationships, meets this girl that he wants to date, and Barry comes in and he's like, are you kidding me? She likes John Tesh. This girl has nothing in common with us. What is wrong with you? You can't date her. So that does come into play. So there's an instance where where there's a direct reference that does kind of affect.
John was so dramatic.
John.
Yeah. I remember he did, he was a commentator for gymnastics at one of the Olympics. And I remember how dramatic he was describing some of the moves.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And then, of course, his funniest line, of course, was he made a mistake and he said, oh, Connie's going to rip me a new one. Connie being Connie Selica, his wife.
That's right.
Show opens, High Fidelity, this Friday the 3rd at 7:30 for 3 weekends at the Barn, the 3rd, the 4th, and the 5th. All of the evening shows are at 7:30. All of the matinees are at 2. And all the matinees are on Sunday. Then the second weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with an added Monday the 13th performance, also at 7:30 p.m. Then a third weekend of shows, Friday the 17th, the 18th, on Saturday, and a matinee on Sunday afternoon, the 19th at 2. At the Barn, the Barn Players of Mission, Kansas, 6219 Martway. Website, thebarnplayers.org, and yes, you must put the in there because there are other groups across this nation of ours called the Barn Players, believe it or not. You would think no one would get a common name like that, but they would. The number to call for more information, not someone there to answer all the time. You might have to wait, but if you must call, 913-432-9100. Oh, the musicals are usually sold out, so I hate to say just walk up, but... what do you think?
Since I'm not trying, if you're in the area, but yeah, I'm not sure if that anything's sold out just yet, but they do have a good turnout at the Barn.
The musicals are among the most attended shows at the Barn has, so you might take that into consideration. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And telling us all about High Fidelity, Delano Mendoza, the music director, and Corey Weber, who plays the role of Liz. in High Fidelity, opening this Friday at the Barn Players of Johnson County. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, man.
Telling us all about the High Fidelity sound
of
High Fidelity. Thanks so much for being here. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. He'll have some great music for you to hear as well. We have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.